Well, obviously, protests ranging all across the Middle East, through the northern Africa, all the way over to Cote d'Ivoire and then over to Iran. Demonstrations in Yemen, Bahrain, Libya, Algeria, Jordan. So far, no unrest in neighboring Saudi Arabia. Why not? Joining us this morning is Robert Lacey, author of Inside the Kingdom, Kings, Clerics, Modernists, Terrorists, and the Struggle for Saudi Arabia. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Celeste.
Can you tell me what is the difference in Saudi Arabia that we haven't even seen send some of the more peaceful protests like we saw in Jordan?
Well, there are a number of differences. One of them, a basic economic one, is that Saudi Arabia is more prosperous than any of these other countries. It's possessing the largest oil fields, oil reserves in the world. It pumps about 8 million barrels of oil a day. When you live in Saudi Arabia, I just come back there from there last week. I'm going back again in March. You are in a welfare state, free medicine, university students of Saudi Arabia. There are many of them. There must be the last students left in the world who not only don't pay tuition fees, but actually receive money to go to university. And that's true whether you're in Saudi Arabia or one of the 150,000 outside the kingdom who are studying under what are called the King's Scholarships. There may be some in America or Canada listening to me as we and to us as we talk now. There's many things to say. I'll just finish with one other point, and you can come back with more questions. The experience of Saudi Arabia in the last 10 years since 9/11, and we're coming up to the 10th anniversary of 9/11, which, of course, 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudis, has been reform already. The current king, King Abdullah, who's ill, has been in America and now in Morocco convalescing, expected back this week, has made deliberate efforts to move the country into the 21st century, to put right a lot of the things that were wrong. So the average Saudi's experience of what their society is doing is to make progress. There are many things wrong with Saudi Arabia, and let's talk about them. There are many problems, those facing women, employment. What's going to happen to all these young people when they come back? There aren't jobs for them. It's a scandal that only 10 or 11% of Saudis actually own their own homes. But still, most Saudis feel that in the hands of King Abdullah, an immensely popular figure, a sort of Obama without the honeymoon being lost, a man of 85. I mean, I've had young Saudis say to me, I'd give this man 5 years of my own life if he could stay longer. So in those respects, at the moment, the country is set on a positive path with which many people agree.
But, Robert, would you agree with the Interior Minister of Saudi Arabia who says that his country is immune to the protests? Do you think they're immune?
I can see why he says that. I mean, Saudi Arabia is an alliance between church and state. Everybody's heard of the Wahhabis. That's a crude Western slang title for the very fundamentalist Muslims who 250 years ago formed an alliance with the House of Saud, whereby Saudi Arabia would endorse their particularly puritanical version of Islam in return for getting the support of the state. So, 2 days ago, on Friday, there were 50,000 imams in Saudi Arabia rising to their feet at prayer time, the time of the weekly sermon, the khutbah, to talk in favor of the monarchy and keep this godly monarchy going. Now, that was not the case in Egypt, where the Muslim Brotherhood, of course, were against Mubarak. It's not the case in many other states. It's not the case in Bahrain, which, of course, is very complicated because we're talking there conflict between Sunni and Shia. One other reason why the present interior minister might feel smug is because Saudi Arabia is a tribal society, and every tribe has its own allegiance to the House of Saud. The House of Saud, a massive family of 6,000, 7,000, actually represents all the heads of all the tribes, because as the country was created, Ibn Saud, Abdulaziz, the father of the present king, married into every tribe, and so every prince represents every tribe. When I lived first in Saudi Arabia in 1979-80, a number of the heads of the 13 provinces were young, technocratic Saudis, not royals. Nowadays, they are all royals. There are 13 royal princes because local people in the provinces said, we want a prince in charge. We want someone who can pick up the phone and talk to the king. We don't want some meritocratic bureaucrat. And one last statistic I'll throw at you, and surveys are only surveys, but recently the British Embassy did a private public opinion poll in Saudi Arabia on how people felt about change. 20% said, we want more. 20% said, well, we're happy with things as they are. And 60% said, there's been too much change. We're getting too Western. There's too many McDonald's, too many young women and men who don't respect their parents. We want to go back to how things were. Now, at the moment, as I say, there is a social structure and there is money which endorses all of that. And so that is why the Interior Minister, who's a very likely future king, incidentally, he could be smug. But
We only have about a minute left, Robert, so pardon me, but I want to throw this last question at you. The people in the Saudi Arabian government did say they were shaken when Hosni Mubarak was forced to leave power in Egypt. And I'm wondering if that's because of the battle over religious lines in neighboring Bahrain, because there it's a battle between Shias and Sunnis. Is that what's making them possibly nervous in Saudi Arabia?
That's one reason for nervousness. There are probably a couple of million Shia in the eastern province who might be feared as a source of instability. I myself don't think so. I spent a lot of time there in the eastern province with them. Their loyalty first is to Saudi Arabia rather than to Iran. Let's put it this way, Celeste. We are going to see this week big demonstrations in the streets in Saudi Arabia because King Abdullah is expected home. They're putting out the flags in Riyadh at the moment. He will make announcements. We will see if he announces reforms. We will see what's going to happen. If they don't manage change, the House of Saud are in for big trouble. I'm simply saying that in the short term, in the medium
probably okay.
The British betting shops certainly give 4,000-1 against revolution in the House of Saud.
Wow, those are pretty good odds. We'll have to leave it there. Robert Lacey is the author of Inside the Kingdom, Kings, Clerics, Modernists, Terrorists, and the Struggle for Saudi Arabia. Thank you so much, Robert.
There's news coverage and analysis on everything from the Middle East by heading to our site, thetakeaway.org. You can also put your international knowledge to the test. Maybe there's even some British betting odds on the likelihood of the House of Saud surviving.
I think that the betting odds are pretty highly stacked in their favor. Special thanks this hour to our managing producer, Noelle King, the superwoman. She put together the segment you just heard. I'm Celeste Headlee.
John Hockenberry's out all week. I'm Todd Zwillick. This is The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.